Every time I see a discontent person, my first reaction is to give them a lesson on the sovereignty of God. Not to try to patch up their discontent with some kind of counsel, but to talk about the God in whom they evidently do not trust, who is ordering everything according to his own plan.
Welcome to Grace to You with John MacArthur. I'm your host, Phil Johnson. Well, perhaps money's tight this holiday season and you won't be able to see family. Or maybe you just got bad news from the doctor, or you're struggling with a relationship. Not easy to find peace, to be content, when life is hard now and the future doesn't look much better. So what does it take to be content when circumstances are not what you want them to be, when life is confusing or painful? Find out today as John MacArthur continues his study, The Secret to Contentment. And now here's John with the lesson.
We need to learn how to be content. Ask yourself, can I say in whatsoever state I am content? Can I say that I'm content no matter what the circumstances are? That I am perfectly at peace, satisfied, I have enough? If you can't say that, then you have not obeyed the command of God to be content. You say, but how? Let me give you the strands, if you will, in the fabric of contentment. Strand number one, confidence in God's providence. Confidence in God's providence. Every time I see a discontent person, my first reaction is to give them a lesson on the sovereignty of God. Not to try to patch up their discontent with some kind of counsel, but to talk about the God in whom they evidently do not trust or do not know, who is ordering everything according to his own plan. And that is why all things work together for good to them that love God and are the called according to his purpose, because he's in charge. Let me give you a second principle, a second strand in the fabric of contentment. Paul was content, number one, because of confidence in the providence of God. Number two, because of satisfaction with little. Of satisfaction with little. Look at verse 11. This is a quick kind of disclaimer after verse 10. He says, not that I speak from want. In other words, oh, I rejoiced when your gift came. I rejoiced so much when it came. Not that I needed it. Not that I'm speaking out of my own want. For I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Well, what is this telling us? This is telling us that he was satisfied with little. He had bare subsistence. His need was deep and great, but he didn't acknowledge any discontent. He was so at peace with the providence of a sovereign God that he was content. He was so satisfied with very little that it didn't matter that he was a prisoner in the sense that it took his contentment. It didn't matter that he was chained to a Roman soldier, that he ate with bare subsistence, that he stayed in a place that was greatly lacking in comfort. It didn't really touch his contentment. He was satisfied with little. Now, beloved, I want you to know this really hits this particular culture in which we live hard. We live in a culture that is not content, period, with little or much. And my theory is that the more people have, the more discontent they are. I mean, if you want to meet a miserable, unhappy, wretched person, find a rich man somewhere. The attitude of people today is that their needs can never be met. People are compelled to the meeting of needs, and it's a consuming passion, and they never get their needs met. The attitude of people today is anything but satisfaction with little. We have developed need, I think, as maybe the number one value in the American system. I could talk a lot about this, but I'll just talk a little bit about it, just to kind of give you a frame of thinking. We are developing a concept of life that says the whole of life is a process of man meeting his needs. Where does that come from? Freud, Maslow, other psychiatrists. It comes from humanism. Since there is no God and man is ultimate, the all of existence simply is not to satisfy God, but to satisfy whom? Man. And so when you start with a humanistic premise that man is ultimate and that man should be fulfilled and that the whole of life is to meet the needs of man, now you have set man on an impossible course. Now he's going to spend all his life trying to meet his needs. That would be fine with the exception of one fact. Where does he find out what his needs are? Because it's obvious that he hasn't stopped with food and clothing. Who now is defining his needs? The culture is. The culture is now defining his needs. This is so different than Paul. Paul was satisfied with so little. Food and clothing. Place to sleep. And that's exactly what the Bible said. Be content with your wages. Be content with food and clothing. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And realize that the one who has all the resources will never leave you or forsake you. So be content with the bare necessities of life. Paul was there. So he was content because he was so satisfied with little. When he says, not that I speak from want, what he means is I really don't have any needs that aren't met. Maybe they aren't met as fully as I would want them to be met, but they're met. He is so sensitive to this. It's amazing to me. When he wrote 1 Corinthians, he says in chapter 9 to the Corinthians, he says, look, he says, I have a right to live of the gospel because I preach the gospel, which means to make my living off of preaching, I should be supported by churches. He talks about soldiers being supported when they fight wars, and why shouldn't preachers be supported when they preach messages? And he says, I have a right to that. But he says, look, I'm not going to take anything from you because I don't want to charge you for what I do. So he says, I work with my own hands. I don't want to make the gospel chargeable to you. I don't want to cloud your thinking about my motives. So I work. To the Thessalonians, he says, chapter 2, verse 9, you recall, brother, in our labor and hardship, how working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. Here comes the preacher preaching to the Thessalonians, and in order not to have them support him, he works night and day. And when he did receive an offering, to show you his mindset, when he did receive an offering, in chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians, he refers to it, verses 8 and 9. He says, I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to serve you. When other churches did support him, he saw it as a robbery. Isn't that strange? He really did not like to do that. He says, when I was present with you and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone. For when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need, and in everything I kept myself from being a burden to you and will continue to do so. He says to the Corinthians, I don't ever want to be a burden. I am content with very little. Some other dear friends came and met my need, so you don't have to, and I feel like I robbed them. This guy is really hesitant about asking for money, support. Why? Because he was so confident in the providential care of God. He was so confident that God would meet his needs. And because he didn't want people to misconstrue his motives. And because he was so satisfied with little, he was content. I have learned. Emphatic I have learned. Points to the fact that this lesson is in the bag, folks. I got this one down. To be content, to be satisfied, to be self-sufficient in Christ, in whatever circumstances I am. The word content, by the way, is the same word in 2 Corinthians 9:8 translated sufficiency. I'm sufficient. I'm self-contained. I have no needs that aren't met. He's not denying difficulty. He's not denying hard circumstances. He is simply content in God's providential care, and he is satisfied with very, very little. How different that is from today. How different that is. People today who preach the gospel think that gives them a right somehow to live a lifestyle that is way beyond the life of others. How different than those today who focus incessantly on their needs. Paul says, needs? I don't have any needs. I don't have any wants. Somebody might say, Paul, you got to get in touch with your needs, man. You don't even know what your needs are. Well, you're in bad shape. Don't you know that? No, I thought I was in pretty good shape, actually. I have a little food and a little drink and a place to lay down and have a warm blanket. You see, the culture in which we live is just propelled by need, because the definition of man is ultimate. Therefore, the satisfaction of man is the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, man must meet all of his needs. In fact, you see it on the television. The whole idea of television in one fell swoop is to produce in you discontent. Okay? That's the whole idea. I don't know if you realize this. Do you understand what television is all about? Do you understand that the goal of television is to make you discontent so that you think you need something you don't have? You understand that? Do you know that the goal of television is not to put programs on? The goal of television is to make you buy things, so that the primary issue on television is the commercials, and the programs are only to get you there so you can see the commercials. And if the program doesn't get you there to see the commercial, the program is off the air. Because the whole idea is to appeal to your discontent, create a need you didn't know you had, and drive you by that need to buy something. The program is incidental. The commercial is the capstone. Now, what makes this so insidious is this. You will never see a commercial on television that tells you to go to the store and buy food because you need it. You know that. You will never see a commercial on television that implores you to drink water, to sleep, to get something warm when it's cold. You know that. And men will always find their basic necessities. They did in every generation prior to this one. Now we have a whole new approach. I remember when I grew up as a kid, hearing my dad preach a lot on the fact that the problem with a lot of Christians is they're not content with having their needs met. They're trying to get their wants met. Have you ever heard that kind of thing? Sure. You must be content with having your needs met and not your wants, because I remember him saying our wants always exceed our needs. Do you know that's been reversed? Do you know we now live in a society where our needs exceed our wants? You say, what in the world do you mean by that? Follow this kind of thinking. Television doesn't appeal to us on the basis that, wouldn't you like to have this? It appeals to us on the basis that you need this. So now what I'm finding is that I need things I don't even want. Have you noticed that? I didn't want them in the past. I don't want them now, but I need them. That's a whole new ball game. I can't say in a sermon, you can't allow your wants to exceed your needs. That isn't true anymore. Everything is a need. You know, there were millions of women who didn't want to be liberated, and then they found out they needed to be liberated. Did you know that? Did you know there were millions of young people who didn't want to live in sexual liberation until they found out they needed to live in sexual liberation, or they would wound their repressed egos? You see, the whole thing is perverted. Once you have a humanistic base and you say the goal of man's life is to meet his needs, you give the devil everything he needs to move out, and then he just redefines what all your needs are. Homosexuals need to be free to live like homosexuals. Young people need to have unending sexual encounters to liberate their repressed egos. Women need to revolt against the suppression of their husbands, and they need their own careers. Women don't want children, they need children. And your children don't want certain things, they need to express themselves. They need to be freed up from the bondage of parent repression. See, the society then starts defining everything as a need. So where does it stop? Because the premise is we're going to meet needs, because that's why we are here, to get all our needs met. And what does Christianity do? Stupidly, blindly, ignorantly blunders into the same thing and says, oh, so that's the theology. And comes up with health, wealth, and prosperity and says, good, since we all need to be rich and we all need to be successful and we all need to be liberated and that must be what the gospel is. So we'll chase that. So what do you get out of it? An utterly discontent culture and an utterly discontent church. The whole idea of this thing is to produce discontent. It's really tragic. But you see, Paul knew this. Paul knew that the chief end of man was not to meet his needs, but the chief end of man was to worship and enjoy God. Paul knew that it was not the meeting of human need that was the issue, but it was living to the glory of the God who created him that was the issue. And so he was content with very little of this earth's stuff, only what he really needed. And that was enough to satisfy him. People, it's not easy to pull ourselves out of this. Not easy at all. But when you, the worst of it is, when you start redefining the gospel and you make God this big need-meeting genie, you know, you're going to rub your lamp, he's going to jump out and give you everything you need. You see it in the psychology of today. Everybody's running to talk to the counselor because I have these needs that aren't being met in my marriage. What, your husband's not feeding you? It's not warm in your house? Oh, no, I have needs for expression and all these needs. I don't know, who's telling me what I need? We've lost that satisfaction with little that Paul knew. I'll tell you, folks, you will never know real contentment in your heart until you have a total trust, a total confidence in the providence of God who is ordering every circumstance of life for His glory, and you don't need to manipulate, and you don't need to lose your mind in trying to control everything. And secondly, you'll never know contentment until you are satisfied with little, because your satisfaction is not dependent on what the world defines as what you need. Let me give you a third strand, just in closing. A third strand in the fabric of contentment we'll call independence from circumstances. Independence from circumstances. Now, he already alluded to it in verse 11 when he said, in whatsoever circumstances I am, I've learned to be content. Now he wants to expand on that in verse 12. So he says, I know how to get along with humble means. I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, that's the key idea, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need or lack. So what is he saying here? He's saying, look, the third element that you see coming out of his heart here in this contentment is that he was independent of circumstances. He says, in whatever circumstance, in verse 11, and then in verse 12, in any and every circumstance, I'm the same. It's the part of contentment that is utterly indifferent and independent of all circumstances. Beloved, let me tell you, the one thing that steals our contentment most frequently is bad circumstances, right? And we crumble, and we lose our contentment and the sense of sufficiency, satisfaction, and peace because we are victimized by circumstances. What does Paul say? I know how. He says it twice in this verse. I know how, and a little later, I also know how. I know how. I've learned it. He said, I got the secret, folks. I'm living it here. I know how. What do you know how to do, Paul? I know how, one, to get along with humble means. What do you mean by that, Paul? I mean, I'm talking about physical things. He's talking here about food, clothing, daily necessities. I know how to get along with humble means. Poverty is what he has in mind. I know how to be poor. I know how to have very, very little of daily sustenance. And this is very, very basic, just the basic needs of life. Then he says, I also know how to live in prosperity, or to overflow, perisuo, to abound, to be filled. And he's talking again about earthly goods and earthly supplies. Hey, I can get along with poverty, I can get along with prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I've learned the secret. And then he goes on. What secret? The secret of being filled. Well, that's an interesting word, kortazo. It was used of foddering animals. It's used of feeding and fattening animals. Hey, I know what it is to have a big meal. I know what it is to eat well. I know what it is to eat sumptuously. I know what it is to be well fed. And I also know what it is to what? To be going hungry. He had times of great deprivation. He had times when he didn't have enough food to eat. He knew that. He experienced that. And then he closes verse 12 by saying, and I know what it's like to have abundance, and I know what it's like to suffer lack. But the point is, in everything, I'm content. because I live independent from the circumstances. Wow. He was never a victim of the circumstances. He had such faith in God's promises. He knew what Jesus said. You may have to weep now. Remember this in Luke 6:21? But you'll laugh later. You may have to be hungry now, but you'll be full later. His eye was in the right direction. He was looking for the future glory. He never let the circumstances of this life devastate him. He had suffered greatly in the physical, greatly. One thing after another. He finally goes to Jerusalem in the sequence of the book of Acts. They get him in the temple. They take him and slam him in jail, and he winds up in prison in Caesarea for a prolonged period of time. They ship him all the way to Rome. He winds up in prison in Rome. The man had a very, very difficult life. He was deprived many, many times. He suffered lack many, many times. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, in verse 11, he says, "We who live are constantly being delivered over to death for Jesus' sake." He lived on the edge of death all the time. And then in chapter 6, he says, kind of chronicling his life, chapter 6 of 2 Corinthians, he says in verse 4, "In much endurance, in afflictions, in hardships, in distresses, in beatings, in imprisonments, in tumults, in labors, in sleeplessness, in hunger." That was his life. And then in chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians, you know that record, he says, "Look, in far more labors, far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death, 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes, 3 times I was beaten with rods, 1 I was stoned, 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I spent in the deep. I've been on frequent journeys in dangers from rivers, robbers, countrymen, Gentiles, city, wilderness, sea, false brethren. I've been in labor, hardship, through many sleepless nights, hunger and thirst, often without food, cold and exposure, and then I've got the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches." This guy didn't live out any fantasy. This guy lived out a nightmare. This man knew what it was to be in difficult circumstances, but he lived above them. And that is essential to contentment. How can you live above them? Because you're looking and setting your affections on things above and not on things on the earth. Because you count it all joy for the privilege of suffering for the sake of Christ. In other words, you have a heavenly vision. You have an eternal perspective. You're looking to your eternal reward. He summed it up when he said, "This light affliction is not worthy to be what? Compared to the glory which is to come." I live in the light of the glory to come, not in the light of the pain here. Here was a contented man. Why? Because he was confident in God's sovereign providence. He was satisfied with very little and didn't buy into the need values of his culture. And he was independent of circumstances because his affections were on another kingdom.
You've been listening to John MacArthur here on Grace to You. John serves as president of the Masters University and Seminary, located in Southern California. Today, he continued to focus on the secret to contentment. Now, John, thinking about the subject of this study and with Thanksgiving approaching, I want to ask you about the opposite of contentment, anxiety. Now, obviously, no one wants to be anxious, and yet so many are. In fact, one author has called this decade the age of anxiety, and it seems around Thanksgiving and Christmas, the stress of that just grows. Why is that? What do you think accounts for the increase in anxiety during the holidays?
Well, you know, psychologists would tell you one thing. They would say, because you come face to face with family events, and therefore you come face to face with dysfunction. Families are dysfunctional. Sometimes that dysfunction is deep and sinful and all of that. And sometimes it's just major disappointment. So, but when you stop, you know, the treadmill at Thanksgiving and get off and just have a few days to hang around family, those bad relationships sort of rise to the top. And then when you have even more time at Christmas, psychologists would say you have to face all those dysfunctions again. I think basically anxiety comes from disappointment. Disappointment comes from feeling you're missing something, feeling you don't have what you need, you're lacking something. And if you have Christ, you're lacking nothing. Hmm. I think true contentment comes from a sound theology that I know my God, I know my Savior, I know my Redeemer, and I know His promises to me. I have such a strong confidence in the sovereign purpose of God. I have such a strong biblical understanding of His love for me, of His devotion to me, of His care for me, that everything in my life, He is working together to fulfill His eternal purpose, that there's nothing out of line, there's nothing out of order. Everything happening in my life fits within what He has allowed for His glory and my good. My theology removes all fear. You know, some people are anxious because they're worried about illness and death. That kind of thought never enters my mind because the end is already predetermined. My heart is at peace. I've seen the hand of God in my life. I've lived long enough to see evidences of His providence and His love on a day-to-day basis for decades of my life. So I think it's at this time of year that you sort of go the other direction from maybe the typical disappointments that you see when you meet family or things aren't all that you would want them to be, and that gets sort of blown up in those kind of times when you're with those people. I think you go the other direction, and you focus on Christ, and you focus on all that God has done for you. We can help you do that. We have a book called Anxious for Nothing. Been around for a long time, helped tens of thousands of people. It's titled Anxious for Nothing. It'll help you take away that anxiety, give it to the Lord, and enjoy contentment. A second book, The Freedom and Power of Forgiveness. If you can learn to forgive people, you can take an awful lot of anxiety out of your heart. Those two books, Anxious for Nothing, The Freedom and Power of Forgiveness, available as all of our materials are right now at 25% off the regular price. You can order it today.
And those are great and really helpful books. And I'm sure that this holiday season, many of you listening today are going to visit loved ones, some of whom are going through difficult circumstances. Perhaps one of these books would make an ideal gift for them. So I encourage you to get your copy of Anxious for Nothing or The Freedom and Power of Forgiveness when you contact us today. Just go to our website, gty.org, or call toll-free 800-55-GRACE. During the sale, Anxious for Nothing and The Freedom and Power of Forgiveness are even more affordably priced, and shipping is still free. Again, to place your order, go to gty.org or call 800-55-GRACE. Anxious for Nothing can help you know what to say to someone who's worried about the future. And if you're struggling with worry, this book can show you biblical principles for finding peace and contentment. And also John's book, The Freedom and Power of Forgiveness, is a practical look at all aspects of forgiveness, showing you how to forgive others and how to understand God's forgiveness for you. Again, both books are 25% off the regular price. To take advantage of the sale, call 800-55-GRACE or go online to gty.org. And now for John MacArthur, I'm Phil Johnson, encouraging you to tune in tomorrow. John's going to show you how the Apostle Paul could be content even when he experienced beatings and sickness and poverty. Be here for the next installment of John's study, The Secret to Contentment. It's another 30 minutes of unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You.